This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:07 on the evening edition with Hezrel and Kelvin, and we're now taking a look at what's happening in Kampung Bahru. This comes from the Malaysian Insight. They reported that residents in Kampung Bahru are disappointed with the government after the latter refused to offer more than 1,000 ringgit per square feet for their land. A few days ago, Federal Territories Minister Tan Sri Anwar Musa said that the government was going to cancel the offer because there wasn't consensus from all landowners and since only 61% were willing sellers.
That 1,000 ringgit offer was from the previous Pakatan government and was split between 850 ringgit being offered per square feet and 150 ringgit in shares. Residents are seeking for 2,000 ringgit per square feet, the same pitch the residents had proposed to Pakatan. Kampung Headman Malik Saleh said that Barisan National leaders had, at that time, promised residents a higher valuation if they were in government.
So, money's off the table, and the plan now is that the government will include residents' participation in any development plans instead. They will have the first right to refuse or to agree to these developments. The government has divided the area precincts and smaller grids, as well as 7 plots that can be developed immediately, have also been found. And all of this will be carried out in phases.
I can't imagine how frustrating it is for those living in Kampung Bahru.
Yeah.
Especially if they really do... especially for those, I think, for the 61%, right, who have gone through the process of negotiations, a different series of talks with different ministers, different stakeholders, different people. And it seems like there's just not been able to... There's just no solution for them at the end, right? And I get it, right? This is a very complex and complicated matter simply because of the land itself, the history that surrounds it, and the community that's there. Some of them may be very willing and eager to want to let go of the land, but some may not, right? Some appreciate its history, some continue to want to live there, and some really down to basics, they say, well, if you want to develop this land, where are you going to move me to? What are solutions? What other solutions are you offering for me at this point in time?
Yeah, and I think the mixed bag. So now we're looking at 61% of those residents are willing sellers and the others want a higher offer. I think this really speaks to the different emotions people are feeling at this time, right? That they're cash trapped during the pandemic. They want the immediacy of cash flows, but also, you know, trying to make sure they get a good deal. But beyond that, though, I just wonder how developments like this perhaps can give back to the community in the long term. You know, how are they going to give back sustainably besides just buying land I think more importantly also to preserve the identity of the community, like you said, Kel. It has so much history as a Malay a center of Malay communities, and I think that also has to be something that developers keep in mind, preserving the identities of these very special locations. But in the meantime, you can let us know your thoughts. What do you think about the latest updates on the Kampung Bahru developments? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to hear from Professor Dr. Ismail Omar, the president of the Land Professionals Association of Malaysia, on the situation there. So keep it here on the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is coming along to 7:13 on the evening edition with Hezrel and Kelvin. And we're taking a look at the latest developments in Kampung Bahru. This comes after residents have refused the government's offer to pay no more than 1,000 ringgit per square feet for their land. A few days ago, Federal Territories Minister Tan Sri Anwar Musa have said that they're going to cancel the offer since only 61% of the residents were willing to sell their land. So right now we're heading over to the lines where we have Professor Dr. Ismail Omar, the President of the Land Professionals Association of Malaysia. Prof, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you very much.
Could you first walk us through the process of land valuation?
Actually, land valuation is a process that will involve, first of all, a registered or professional valuer. And as a professional valuer is also known as the professional who are capable of analyzing, identifying, and also calculating the value of land. And then first of all, a valuer must be able to identify the land, maybe using maps to look at the lot number, the district of the lot of land and the location, the neighborhood, things like that. Because those affect the property values or the land values. And then soon after we identify the lot of lands on that particular piece of map, or they call it grants, land grants, and then we have to go forward and then look at the site inspection. We have to do the site visit, take photos, and measure the size. What is the shape of the land? Is there any buildings on it? What is the neighborhood areas, the planning, etc., etc.? I.e., what we are doing is to identify and to make sure what are the factors affecting the land values. So after we got the identifying of the land and the site inspection, we have to go to the what we call the legal or the title search at the land office to make sure that all those information are really good, and they are not something that will provide false information to us, because the value is something about mathematics and also science and art. Then we come up to the calculation. This will depend on the method of valuation. We have five methods of valuation, and the comparison method is the most simplified and easiest way to determine what is the value of the property or the land. Mm. And it depends on the sales evidence, the selling and buying and information in the market. And this comparison method is only suitable to be used in case there are lots of evidence in the market. But if there is land with potential, such as in Kampung Bahru, comparison may not be, I repeat, the most suitable method of valuation to be adapted. And we'll come to the next method, that is the residual. The residual method is to measure or to value the land with potential for development. I do believe that Kampung Bahru has got potential for development, and therefore residual method is the best, not comparison. Mm. So all the information about the method evaluation is written well in my book, The Real Estate Valuation, that was published last year.
So looking at Kampung Bahru, is the current valuation by the valuation department of 850 ringgit per square feet, 150 ringgit in shares, a fair valuation?
Yeah, I do believe that we have to go back to the basic of what we are teaching the first-year valuation student at the university, you know, because the property or land is heterogeneous, not homogeneous. They are different from one to another. Even though they are within the same location, but in terms of vertical or height for the building is different. So how could we say that every piece of land over there is worth 850 or 1,000 hectares? There are about 220 acres of land consisting of about 900 lots of land in Kampung Bahru altogether. Outside the marsh area, there are also 465, so altogether it's about 1,355 lots of land in Kampung Bahru. How could we say those lots of land are similar and fetching the same or similar level of price in the market? This is surprising, yeah? And then, of course, I did mention just now about the site inspection of the location of the property and physical characteristic of the property, right? Because even though the main factor affecting the property market or the land market is location, but surely the location or the siting of the land is different from one to another. There are prime sites along Jalan Raja Alang, for example, and there are inferior location along in the inferior area. So those different in location will bring about different in values of those land. So how could we say that RM 1,000 per meter per square feet is to every plot of land over there? This is very strange, you know. So another thing is that is just the location, but also if you look at the legal or tenure of the land, some of them are having restriction in interest that cannot be sold to non-Malays. So this will narrowed down the market of the land, and it will fetch lower value then. And I did mention just now, there are about 465 lots of land which are located outside the mass area. And this will have different restriction in interest altogether. So how could you say that every lot of land is having 1,000 ringgit per square feet and all the same, you know? It's very difficult to say that, actually. It's not logic, you know?
Right. So on the other hand, then, Kampung Baru residents are hoping for at least 2,000 ringgit per square feet. And before Periketan took over the government, an UMNO leader even claimed that the land could fetch up to 3,000 ringgit per square feet. So how realistic are these ranges, the 2,000, you know, whether it's 2,000 ringgit, 3,000 ringgit, how realistic is this valuation?
Okay, I did mention just now about the location-wise of the land. And then there were lots of lands that being transacted at about 850 per square feet about 3 years ago. About 3 years ago, there are lots of land which has been transacted in the market for 850 per square feet, right? And there was also lots of land acquired by the rapid transit MRT, you know, for 2,000 per square feet. And there are also an evidence of transaction paid by the buyer about 3 years ago, so at about 2,500 per square foot. So we come back to the range of the value of those land over there, from 1,000 and up to 2,500. But it was 3 years ago, and considering the effect of post COVID, the property market is down at the moment about 20 to 25% in general. So we would say that the comparison between Kampung Baru land to the CBD areas of land in Kuala Lumpur, it's not perfect. It's not apple to apple. So we have to make a little bit of adjustment here and there. And the valuers are responsible for this because they are being trained. They are very skillful in that, you know. So we cannot just listen to everybody talking about 3,000, 4,000, and why not 4,000, something like that, you know. Because we do have to come back to the general principle that a valuer is the best person to identify or to value this value of lands over there, you know.
Would you see the value of Kampung Baru rising when redevelopment happens? And maybe do you think this could maybe be a reason why residents are so hesitant to agree to then Pakatan's proposal?
Actually, I did a lot of discussion with the Kampung folks over there, and then with my clique in the property industry, we come up to the conclusion that the development pressure from outside Kampung Baru or the proposed development is not only the only reason for Kampung Bahru folks to refuse the offer made to them, you know. But actually, there are a lot of landowners over there, they refused to sell off their land because they know exactly that if they sell the land, then they will be apart from the land itself, and they are losing the land rights forever and ever. That's why they lose it. They don't want, they refuse it, you know. So this, in theory, there are a lot of professors talking about this. They call it market value constraint. And it is not the only pressure from the surrounding areas of property development that make them to refuse the increase or appreciation in land values. But there are many, many other things, especially they don't want or they refuse to be apart from their land, or they don't want to lose their land rights forever and ever. And the money is a liquid asset, you know, and there are multiple land owners. So if they collect all the purchasing price and then divide it between among themselves, you know, at the end of the day, they cannot afford to buy even affordable house over there, you know.
Looking at the government, does the government need a 100% buy-in to proceed with the land acquisition?
No, not really. Because they, under the Land Acquisition Act 1960, the government or the government agency is empowered by this act to acquire any piece of land in the country. And they do not need a percentage of those who agreed, or land owners who agreed with that. Even though 100% disagreed with the land acquisition, the government, if they really have the political will and decision, they can then go about it and then acquire those land actually.
In an article back in January 2020, Khalid Samad, the then FT minister, said that small group meetings have been held since December 2019 and that plans to develop Kampung Bahru can be finalised by June. How big of a part did COVID-19 play in hampering these development plans?
Oh, yeah, we must remember that the development plan is just a piece of paper. You know, your marks over there, what is the plot ratio, what is the boundary, things like that. So actually, COVID-19 is not really affecting or hampering those development plans. Development plan is still there. But the problem or the impacts of this COVID-19 is on the property market, really. On the land value in the market, you know, because I did mention just now, generally, the property market in Kuala Lumpur is down for about up to 25%. So maybe the value of those land in Kampung Bahru is less than 1,000 ringgit per square foot, actually. And we must remember that the present regime of the government is talking about to make those development plan in Kampung Bahru more flexible. They are not talking about the plot ratio anymore. They make it flexible. They make it open. And they are talking about 400 million ringgit to widen and upgrade those lands, you know, that consider that is considered as what they call the prime and main land, to boost the infrastructure over there, and then so that the government, the landowners over there will be pushed to go for their development of their land, you know. So with the changes of the plot ratio, the height of the building, all the building to be put on the land, I would say that the government is doing a good move, a very good move, to start off the development of the land.
Right. And we have just less than a minute left, Prof. This Kampung Bahru issue has remained unresolved for over 30 years. What are the long-term effects of this stalemate dragging out?
Oh, no true road, yeah. I don't think so, because we are talking about 220 acres of land, about 1,500 lots of land. But the way is that, you know, in land development process, one of the philosophy of development is the neoclassical, the demand and supply. So another one, not only talking about the government that will push the development, even though the government is not there doing something about the land development, actually the demand and supply will play their roles, you know. And the way I look at it, Kampung Bahru redevelopment is really a challenge to everybody. So especially to the town planners, to the politicians, to the land economists, valuers, and other property professionals, you know, and especially to the land owners and land developers. If they cannot identify the challenge and take up the matters, it will be a failure, really. And as a result, the land will be eyesore and still be a pocket of land within the CBD areas of Kuala Lumpur. We don't want this. So everybody must come forward, hands in hand, take up the challenge, being a very professional in the manner. The politician must have a political will and decision, and the landowners must be sincere, must tolerate about the price, things like that, you know. And everybody have to find out the best solution ever. Put up the development means to adapt those value of lands, actually. And one of the ways to undertake the development is by way of doing benchmarking. Benchmarking with similar lands overseas, such as Maori land in New Zealand, Aboriginal land in Australia, indigenous land in Africa, Indian lands in the USA, etc. So from there, we can have a lot of lessons on how could we go about the development of Kampung Bahru. Right. And in fact, in the country also, we do have Melaka customary land, native land in Sabah and Sarawak, Malay Reserve, that have been successfully developed, things like that, you know. And after all, the development can use the capital, raise up the capital through wakaf. That is the Islamic way of financing, without any buying, without involving any buying and selling land, which is good for the future generation. I mean, the rewards or the revenues from the wakaf will be received by three generation of their land owners, you know.
Right.
And after all, I would say there were lands in overseas that have been successfully developed through wakaf, like the Bank Islam Menara Imarah in Jalan Tuan Perak, you know, it is under wakaf. And since the present government is having no budget, they're talking about 10 billion ringgit, we can use sukuk, that is Islamic bonds, you know.
Right.
So we know that the landowners are looking forward to develop, but they don't have capital.
Right.
The government is lacking in term finance, can use Islamic sukuk to do that.
Prof? Yeah. I apologize, but we unfortunately are running out of time since we do have to head to the 7:30 news. That was Professor Dr. Ismail Omar, the president of the Land Professionals Association of Malaysia. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.